Hello, Baggies fans, and welcome back to the latest episode of the Baggies broadcast, brought to you in association with the Kettle and the Toaster Man. My name is Johnny Drury. He is Lewis Cox. We are back for what I think is our 45th episode of the campaign, knocking on the door for 50 as the season draws to a close. Hopefully it carries on past that. Coxy, you all right, mate? Bit of a rubbish day on Saturday, but how are you, mate, on this sort of sunny but rainy Monday morning where I am in Shropshire?
Breezy,
I don't know what it's like down
breezy.
Where you are.
Yeah, cold chill this morning. I'm all right, man. I'm all right, thank you. Yeah, I'm trying to, you know, slowly get over Saturday's events. No, it's fine. I mean, Albion's unbeaten run was always going to end at some point, I suppose. Although, it would have been quite nice to get through the final four games, wouldn't it, and go unbeaten into the playoffs. That would be quite something. We were actually, it's probably our fault, Johnny, for cursing things, but we were chatting before the game, weren't we, about how if Albion remain unbeaten in these final four, obviously including Saturday, that would have equaled the efforts of Slavs.
Hold on, you
Slavs
said
crop
that,
of 1920.
Which means it's your
yeah,
fault.
My fault. Sorry, not
I never said
fault.
That.
Yeah, my fault. Yeah. So that would have been a nice one to reach. And I think Val's team at the start of whatever season that was, 21-22, did 10 unbeaten in the league, didn't they, as Carlos's lot did then. So, yeah, well, I wasn't going to go on forever. And I think we know, as we've discussed, and we're probably discussing this, that Albion weren't blowing sides away in this unbeaten run, were they? Yeah, 5 wins, 5 draws. A few of them were a little bit sketchy, a little bit ropey, ones where you're happy with a point. So, look, it is what it is. And we've got probably a lot to discuss from the game, really. Not least the main incident, which still has everyone debating and speaking on, I think.
Yeah, there is a bit to discuss. Not a lot on the performance, but, you know, we'll talk about Sunderland. We'll talk about the fallout from it, stipulations about what Albion have got to do. We'll talk about the end of season award snub. No Albion players in the Championship team of the season. We'll talk about Blind Dave, who was in the awards last night alongside Albion owner Shilin Patel at the EFL Awards. And we'll answer all your questions. Have a little glance forward to Leicester as well on Saturday. But yeah, Cox, the performance wasn't fantastic. You know, for me, it's a case of move on now. But, you know, I wrote a piece on Saturday night about Thomas Asante and the fact that it was just naive and he'll learn from it. I wrote a line in there saying the red card impacted the game, but I don't think it cost Albion the game. If that makes sense. I don't think, you know, I thought Albion could have still had a go and they had chances, didn't they? Or they had spells of pressure rather than chances. But it's just one, just forget it now, move on. You know, we've got 3 games left. Let's just try and get this wrapped up on Saturday if we can.
Yeah. Well, as we'll get onto later, you've had your abacus out, haven't you, and worked out that it can be wrapped up on Saturday. So that's good. Without wanting to spoil the end of the podcast. But It didn't cost Albion in the decisive moment. A couple of minutes later, Ekwa's winner in first half stoppage time. Albeit, I don't suppose we quite ever know, do we? It might have been Thomas Asante's man in the box, but I'm pretty sure it wouldn't have been. So there's no excuses in that regard. You lose your striker to a red card, that doesn't mean you can't defend a set piece, and you leave a man totally unmarked. I thought the second half, I thought we saw Albion without a sort of focal point up front, without a striker to occupy defenders or run the channels. I thought we saw Albion with sort of a load of attackers chucked on at a point. I know some replaced others. And there wasn't much of a chance, was there? There wasn't any clear chance created for me. John Swift shot wide from 25 yards plus. You know, that's just not a clear chance. Just looked a little bit toothless. I know Thomas Asante, aside from the red card, has his detractors when it comes to chances on goal. Obviously, we saw that Rotherham last week, didn't we? And things like that. Obviously, Madge is on the verge of it. DK is nowhere to be seen. Obviously, Andy Vyman was unused on the bench, which was maybe a little bit surprising. We just saw attackers who were kind of in and around the final third, but not that focal point leading the line to make the difference and be on the end of a good cross from Fellows or something like that, or a Phillips ball. I watched the highlights actually when I got home, and the highlights included a Matt Phillips header, which was just, you know, you wouldn't call it a chance. you just wouldn't. So that told you everything I think you need to know about the second half. And didn't feel like a goal was coming, did it? And if anything, Sunderland should have had a second or a third. So yeah, I don't disagree, Johnny. You know, draw a line under it and move on. Look, it's not, or it shouldn't damage Albion's top six chances, realistically. It shouldn't. Still obviously firmly in Albion hands with three to go. My slight concern, as I put out after the game, is that like two away games ahead, and I know the away form's been sort of arrested slightly, hasn't it? It's much better this side of Jan than it was before. However, away wins still haven't been a regular thing, have they? So you've probably got to go, you probably need to win one of these three games,
yeah.
And ideally at Leicester or Sheffield Wednesday. And you know, they're neither of those are on the beach, are they? We know their form's fluctuating, certainly Leicester's. But Leicester is still a very good side for a reason, clearly. And it'll be tough to go there and win. And, you know, that doesn't happen. It could put a lot on Hillsborough, couldn't it? And they might be, yes, they might be down by then, but they might be bang up for it, fighting, scrapping. I think it's one of the worst pitches in the division from memory. The atmosphere there could be pretty wild. You just want it. You want a win by either of those, really, because you don't want. We were saying in the press box, weren't we, on Saturday? You just don't want anything on the final day, because anything can happen. And yeah, Preston, regardless of who it is on the final day, to be honest, while you'd back Albion at the Hawthorns, you just never want anything on the final day.
No, you certainly don't. Just want to talk about in terms of, you know. I was going to do a piece last week and we didn't put it out yet, just about atmosphere and around atmosphere at the Hawthorns. And I know that unbeaten runs come to an end now, but Albion are sort of 10 unbeaten. It was one defeat in 14 before Saturday, but it just didn't have the feel of that, to be perfectly honest. We talked about atmosphere last week on the pod, and I don't think we really had the feel of Albion on this really good run. It almost felt they were stuttering a bit. And I reference this with you on Saturday, that it feels a little bit like Albion are maybe, it feels really contradictory to say, but falling across the line at the moment, a little bit similar to what they did under Slaven Bilic post-COVID lockdown.
Where not results-wise, but performance-wise.
Yeah, but performance-wise, almost. And, you know, I know they had, obviously, I think it was three draws in a row, and then the win over Rotherham, and then obviously defeat now to Sunderland. So that's what, one win in five.
Mm-hmm.
It just feels a little bit like that under Slav. And we know under Slav there was massive question marks around fitness post COVID lockdown pandemic, or whether Albion had done enough, and that was the reason for their stuttering. That's not going to be the case this time, but it does feel a little bit like. And another thing as well that I saw a fan tweet about yesterday, Albion's form has kind of dipped slightly since Corbrand's had more options to choose from. So since in the last five games, he's had players coming back into the fold. You know, obviously we've seen Madger briefly, but Phillips come back in, you know, and he's had a few more different options to choose from, and the form has dipped a little bit. But yeah, that's just it's just really strange at the moment, I think. That's really strange, the atmosphere around the game. I think the atmosphere was good for large parts of the game on Saturday, but then I'll never judge anyone for leaving a stadium early. If people want to leave early, they can leave early. But it's like 8 minutes to go in the game and the ground was nearly empty. And it was just, it's just been quite strange. The atmosphere around the place has been quite strange. And I put it down to the fact that Albion has just been fifth for so long. But it does just feel like they are falling. We're all waiting for the playoffs or waiting for it to
be confirmed. We did speak about this at length last week, didn't we? And that fifth place thing was one of probably a good handful of reasons we gave, I would say. I've said to a few people in the office today, I do think being in that position for so long brings around a lack of drama, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to, you win games, nothing changes. You draw games, nothing changes. You lose games, nothing changes. And I've said for ages, I think being in that same place is to the credit, really, because teams are, you below them, their form's all over the place. They're dropping, they're going, but Albion have been able to maintain that. But I think it has been at a loss to kind of drama and excitement, and we really need a winner here, else we're going to be out of the top six or whatever. So I think that's a little bit of factor, but there's more. There are other factors that, as I say, we discussed last time. Regards to form thing and falling away, I mean, I didn't cover those that COVID, that 1920 promotion, but obviously watching it from afar, recall what happened. What I would say, the thing, I've written something today, it'll be going online shortly, hopefully by the time people listen to this. It's something Corbyn's acknowledged in a couple of presses, I think, is, and it's certainly the story of the three successive draws anyway, where I think Albion's sort of form performance problems lie is game management. And I mean that in terms of patchiness, just be it a bad first half an hour, a bad final half an hour, a bad hour, and having to recover. Yeah, you look at those draws, and Millwall was a non-performance, wasn't it, until a penalty sort of rescued it, slightly improved second half. Watford, I mean, that was a proper rescue job, wasn't it? Twice in the last 20 minutes, late equaliser. Stoke, kind of the other way in that Albion worked the lead and are then pegged back. But, I mean, I wasn't at Stoke, but don't think you'll be able to tell me this. I don't think there were much value for a 2-0 lead, were they, performance-wise. So I think it's not a consistent issue on bad starts in games. I think Albion can start games well and then fall away. I think we see that quite a bit. But the head coach has referenced that seems to be spells in games where we don't quite know where to go, how to face it, have the, I don't know, physical, technical, tactical levels for it. He referenced after the Rotherham win last Wednesday that he was actually really pleased with how Albion managed that one. Now, look, Rotherham, worst team in the division, relegated, all of that. And it wasn't swashbuckling, was it? But Corbyn was particularly happy of just managing it. And he made a point of that. But there have been a good few occasions, I think, over the last, I don't know, month, 6 weeks, easy, where he just won a little bit more. Is composure the word? I'm not sure. Use of experience just to handle the occasion and the context of games.
I think what we haven't seen as well is that my next line was just Albion needed a spark. We haven't seen anyone maybe grabbing a game by the scruff of the neck and sort of dragging the team forward. We've knew maybe needed it. And there are players now who can do it. You know, I've spoken numerous times about John Swift, and I don't think he's had a very good season, but it just needs someone to just, yeah,
well,
grab
one player that has, Johnny, in fairness, one player that has in the last month is Grady.
He's one. Yeah, he's one. But one that they needed maybe, certainly on Saturday, that when they needed to, I know they're up against it with 10 men, but they thought Albion had enough on the field to go and get a draw, possibly. They just needed someone to just, you know, pick everyone up and just drag them forward by their collars and try and take the game to Sunderland, and they kind of didn't, really.
Ironically, Swift, who I don't think did masses when he came on, but his one moment of as close as Albion went shooting wide after a nice little turn. That's what you want to see, isn't it? A bit of quality like that. Swift's goal at Ipswich.
Yeah.
Was it February? That was a worldie that he can do, isn't it? And he's got it in his locker, but look, the Swift conversation's a little bit tough, isn't it? I mean, he's starting the odd game, but he's clearly struggling for form. So yeah, it's what I said near the top, really, about having those attackers on, but no kind of nothing in the box there, no focal point to hit or someone to cross to or release with a pass. So the overall thing there about sort of patchy spells in games in terms of management, I think is a factor. And you make a point about the spark. I think Grady Dean Garner's in good form to me. I mean, it's funny, isn't it, Sunderland? Because I think for 35 minutes, it was some of the best football we've seen Albion play for a good amount of time. I think they look really sharp. Their approach play was played with a good intensity. They moved the ball quickly, sharply. I think Corbyn went along with that as well. A few of us noted it in the press box. Didn't lead to too many clear-cut openings, I would add. But Albion was still a threat from range. They looked on it, and it sort of just faded before the red card. But obviously, the red cards changed things. And what I was going to say is I think Dean Garner was the sharpest of the lot. I think he's looked really good, and he looks like a player determined to take the ball by the horns. I noticed Furlong playing well as well. But I don't suppose it can be left all to Dean Garner or all to another player. We're going to get on to talk about Josh Madger, aren't we, who hasn't played senior football far in Rotherham for 5 months or whatever, 4 months. So it can't be. Others do have to step up, I think. And I'm wary of being too critical here. Look, it was 10 games unbeaten. It was 5 wins, 5 draws, but not so long ago, we were really praising this squad for having the kind of steely underbelly, you know, grit, don't know when they're beaten. And I don't think Saturday changes that. I really don't. I think I'd like to file Saturday as a one-off. Has it been coming? I wouldn't necessarily say that, but performances haven't been massively convincing as the whole, haven't they? But credit to Albion in, you know, finding a way not to be beaten so often. And that's a good trait to take forward, at least. But I think the overall point is probably that as a collective, the attackers need to show a bit more.
Striker situation now. Obviously, Thomas Asante is going to serve a one-game ban. We've talked there about Josh Madger, who wasn't involved on Saturday. Which direction do you go with it for Leicester? You've got Jed Wallace there. You have got Madger, who's probably going to be in the squad. You've got Matt Phillips, who's played up front before. But Andy Vyman, who is obviously a little bit out of favour at the moment. Which way can you see Carlos going with his forward line on Saturday?
Well, I was tempted to say bring your boots, Johnny, but you're not at the King Power, are you?
Otherwise engaged, that we'll come on to later.
Can't even call upon your services. I suspect we will see Jed Wallace leading the line on Saturday. That's my feeling around it. I wouldn't be against seeing Vyman play it, but he's conspicuous by his absence from the bench the other day, wasn't he? Him not coming on was interesting. I know Albion had other attackers to bring on, and that's what the head coach did. But yeah, I always think with Vyman, he's a good little fox in the box, isn't he? Something falls to him, the chances are he tends to put it away. But I think the point you made about doing pretty well before all the bodies came back and the period where Wallace had to lead the line and some of the good runs he was making and keeping defenders honest, I think that might be useful for Leicester. I do. And, you know, you look at the options of people able to obviously play where Wallace plays in terms of Fellows, Johnson, Dean Garner, Phillips. You know, there's a multitude of options that can play out wide while Wallace leads the line in this, you know, in this case. I think Madger, like you say, will be in the squad, he'll be on the bench and should be able to come on if needed for, you know, 30 minutes, you'd have thought, 30, 35 minutes now. Had an hour for the 21s the other night, and that'll do him the world of good in terms of match minutes. And that could be massive. Look, his fitness levels aren't going to be where they need to be. His match sharpness isn't either. But I mean, I've been really specific and cautious about how they've worked Madger back and followed a specific detail and plan. And all in the hope and expectation that he can be really effective in these final games. And look, his game's hopefully about taking a chance that comes to him and maybe a bit of clever link play. So hopefully if Albion need Madger from the bench on Saturday, he can come on and make a real difference. But yeah, I imagine it'll be Wallace leading the line. I don't think Madger would be ready to start. I think that would be a little bit of a risk. And Vyman can't quite see it at the moment, as I was saying. Matt Phillips, probably, I don't know, a little bit too soon for him, is it really? Out of position, certainly, in a demanding lone striker role. So, yeah, Wallace would be the one I'd expect. I think it could do Albion a favour. It's not his position, and he can be unfairly judged there, and it takes away sometimes his ability to be able to be in positions to cross. But I think Wallace has some good traits in terms of energy and hard running and pressing that can suit that role. Maybe certainly away from home against good sides. So perhaps it comes at a good time, Leicester away.
Yeah. I'd imagine that Wallace will be odds on to start. Let's just have a look at what the championship table now looks like after Saturday. Let's have a look who's in the playoffs. Well, we don't really need to look from fourth, really, because Albion aren't going to catch Southampton. They can just about catch them, but Southampton have got games in hand.
I was about to call you a pessimist.
Yeah, so let's go fifth. Let's go fifth down to eighth. Well, let's go fifth to tenth, because Preston are still, there's a few teams that are sort of joint on it. It looks now that it's going to be two from six or seven, really. Six, to be honest. So you've got Albion. Six, yeah. Albion played 43-72. Norwich played 43-71. Hull played 42, so they played a game less, 65. Coventry, 42-63. Middlesbrough, 43-63. Preston, 42-63. So Preston still not out of it, and they come to the Hawthorns on the final day of the season. So Albion have got a 7-point buffer to Hull and a 9-point buffer to Coventry, which is still intact because Coventry are beaten at Blues on Saturday. Hull and Coventry have games in hand, which are against each other, which comes in a week or so's time. So if we look, I suppose the question is, how can Albion wrap it up on Saturday? If Albion beat Leicester and Hull fail to win, they've got to go to Watford, who are looking quite good. They've got to go to Watford. Yes, they've got to go to Watford on Saturday. And then they play Coventry on the following Wednesday. But they go to Watford on Saturday. If they fail to win at Vicarage Road and Coventry fail to... Well, no, Coventry don't play now this weekend. So maybe Albion can't wrap it up this weekend. But they can Hull can certainly be out of the picture this weekend.
Yeah.
And then it just leaves Coventry. So Coventry don't play this week. So if Albion win, they'll go 12 points clear of Coventry. And Coventry have 4 games remaining. So Coventry would have to win every game and overturn a 10-goal swing. And Albion would obviously have to lose the final 2 games of the season. So a win on Saturday can't confirm it. Coventry's FA Cup semi-final. However, can all but confirm it, really, because it would be a very, very strange turn of events for Albion to muck it up that weekend. But like we say, Middlesbrough's still in it on 63 points as well. Preston have got a game in hand. Preston win their game in hand, they go to 66. That puts them 6 points behind Albion then. Not over yet. They're not just
what Saturday can do while Cough don't play, as you were saying, it can. Like I say, results dependent, and I suppose all of these results are unlikely to happen, but it can write off Hull in 7th. It could write off Borough in 9th. And Preston in 10th, I'd have to work that out with their
if Preston lost on Saturday and Albion won, that would probably knock them
out of the way. But I think just quickly on Preston, I mean, you make the point that the game in hand for both Cov and Hull is against each other, isn't it? And I think is that quite late, is it? Or not till, is it the midweek after Albion play Sheffield Wednesday?
I think Preston's game in hand comes tomorrow night, and it comes in the form of a trip to Southampton. There's one game. Yeah, one game tomorrow. Preston against Southampton is tomorrow night.
The picture could very much change.
On Tuesday.
But I think credit to Preston. I mean, if they get a positive result there, I mean, even a draw that sort of keeps them in and around it just about. The fact Hull and Cov kind of play each other in their game in hand, yeah, one of those is going to lose ground and probably fall out of it. So I've sort of always thought as Preston have never totally fallen away. And look, I don't think they've got the best squad in this chase or anything like that, but they've stuck around. And the fact that they come to the Hawthorns on the final day, if Albion haven't got the job done and Preston are still in it, then you know, they're still in it for a reason, aren't they? All credit Preston, they've somehow managed to put themselves there. So, by no means out of it. It's definitely those 2 from 6, as you say. But Albion, look, Albion just have to focus on themselves at the King Power. And if they can inflict another defeat on Leicester, is it 2 defeats in a row for the Foxes? Just having a look.
Beaten
on the road at Millwall and Plymouth, obviously they'll be a little more confident going back to their home comforts, I'm sure. But if Albion can sort of extend the pain that Resca side are feeling at the moment, it would go, as you say, it wouldn't quite do it mathematically, but Albion are as good as they're and at the moment it's not quite there at the moment, is it? Because we're talking about how, you know, these 3 games left, Albion probably need to win one of them. And I think we all probably agree they do need... There's a world, I'm sure, where if everyone falls apart, a couple of draws could get Albion there and that they don't have to win one more or even a draw or whatever. But I think for everyone's peace of mind and not wanting anything on May the 4th against Preston, you want to be getting that win somewhere, either in the East Midlands or up in Sheffield.
Yeah, certainly. Let's move on to... we've got a couple of stories that come from last night's EFL end of season awards. We know that Carlos Corberan was snubbed in the manager of the season nominations a few weeks ago, which was won by Kieran McKenna, probably deservedly won by Kieran McKenna, Ipswich on the verge of back-to-back promotions. But there was the announcement of the EFL Team of the Year last night, which surprisingly didn't have a single Albion player in it. It was Hermison in goal from Leicester City, a back four of Walker Peters, Southampton, Ampadu Leeds, Greaves Hull, Leif Davis from Ipswich. Can't disagree with that. I think he's been exceptional. Kieran Dewsbury-Hall and Sarah from Norwich, Dewsbury-Hall from Leicester. Morgan Whittaker of Plymouth, who's had a very good season. Sammy Smodix, league's top goal scorer. No doubt about that one. Crescencio Somerville, who was also crowned EFL Player of the Season. And Rutter from Leeds was the striker. Now, Coxie, I don't think Albion would have had too many contenders in there. However, given their defensive record, the fact that neither Alex Palmer nor Cedric Kipre are in that side is a little bit baffling. The rest of the positions I can put up with. You know, Sarah and Diego have had good seasons. So have you, Kushlu and Mowat. But the fact that Kipre nor Palmer is in there. Like, don't get me wrong, I think Hermison has got the most clean sheets.
I think it's Meslier from.
Is it Meslier now?
Please. Let me just. I was looking at that this morning. Yeah.
I know the Leicester guy was up there, but it's surprising that they're not in there. I know.
It is Meslier
pretty much
from,
next to nothing, don't they? But.
Yeah. It's Meslier clean sheets from some distance, and then Palmer second, and the Leicester boys a little while down. I again wrote something just now that. Yeah, be online shortly. Sort of discussing this, debating this in our debrief. Said a little bit of what you just said, really. I think Kipper and Mowat have been Albion's most consistent performers this season outfield. Don't think Palmer's too far behind. But then I look at Dewsbury Hall's the best player I've seen in the division this season. And I know Sarah's been excellent, certainly of late for Norwich. I don't imagine Mowat probably be too far behind in the reckoning, but you don't often sort of see him. I don't know if it's a lack of goals or lack of assists from him, maybe. So you get the sort of wider, more general attention. I think that's fair to say. But you're right about the Albion clean sheet factor and the form of Kipra. It's been immense, certainly from the start. Certainly, if you look from the start of the maybe September until, I don't know, January, February time, whether he's come down half a level or a level the last little period, I don't know, there's been fewer clean sheets, haven't there, certainly. But I think Kipra has been immense. And like if Ampadu and it's Greaves, isn't it, from Hull, have been that much better than Kipra, I'd be surprised. Certainly in the Hull case. I find that one a little bit tricky to believe. And I think Palmer should be right there. I really do. I don't know how they... I'd like to know how they judge it, really. Whether it's on sort of ratings given from publications, you know, you see who scored ratings doing the rounds often, don't you? And whether it's from just the EFL Championship sort of teams of the week as the season goes, I guess that's more likely. But yeah, Palmer should be right there for me. The season he's had with Meslier, I feel hard done too, I guess. I know he's made a couple of high profile errors, but yeah, I also thought perhaps young Tom Fellows has got a case in the young player. Did the young player go to the Leeds boy, Archie Gray? I think I saw.
Yes, did, yeah.
I'm not sure that's called young player of the season anymore. Is it? I don't know if it's scholar of the season. It might be called something different. But Fellows' impact has been immense. I know. I think of a couple of young players off the top of my head, the lad at Blues, but Fellows has to be right there, I think.
Yeah.
It's an interesting debate, isn't it? Because I think. Overall, as I wrote, the fact that we can't push too many probably goes hand in hand with what you said 10, 15 minutes ago about that spark and someone grabbing it and Albion not having your, I don't know, your big scoring striker or your one with loads of assists or anything like that. So I think it shouts like a team, a squad effort, whose performance has probably been more than the sum of its parts, I would say. The effort that Corbyn's managed to sort of drag out from a group with you know, relative to the resources he's had available. I think, yeah, it's been all about that group squad effort. And perhaps that's why we're not seeing, you know, a handful of Albion sort of recognition at these awards. Perhaps it's not the biggest surprise, but I think they can feel a little bit hard done by in one or two quarters. And it's that wider thing, isn't it, of people not particularly on board with Albion's situation and the position of the club and the finances. They might, well, at West Brom are fifth, that's where they should be, that's where they are, you know. But really, I think everyone sort of involved in it from this end and fans watching on will know that Corbyn's done a very good job to keep the club moving in the direction he has and where the team is on the pitch, obviously, while the takeover's happened.
Yeah, it's good odds of it. And yeah, like you said, you're always going to back your own players. There was another award that Albion did scoop, though, on Sunday evening, and arguably more important than any football accolade. Blind Dave Healy, all Albion fans will know, or should say Blind Dave Healy, OBE, is known as Blind Dave, was crowned the EFL Supporter of the Season at the EFL Awards on Sunday evening. Judges on the judging panel said that the ambassador for the Albion Foundation had been recognised for his fundraising efforts and his challenges involving running, cycling and swimming. And this is a figure that I could scarcely believe. I know that Dave Healy has done an awful lot, but he has raised more than £3 million for the Albion Foundation in total, from exploits such as cycling from Colditz in Germany to West Brom and walking Hadrian's Wall. He's already announced his next adventure. He is going to be doing a 1,000-kilometre European cycle ride following the length of the First World War trench lines from the French-Swiss border to the Belgian coast. And yeah, just want to say what an unbelievable, you know, he ran 7 marathons in 7 days across 7 continents. Now that is a pretty, pretty impressive feat. And just what a man. And that, I think, an award like that is more important than any football related award that was probably given out last night. So well done to Blind Dave. He's an absolute legend of the football club. And I'm sure he won't be hanging up his running shoes or his. Or putting the bike in the shed anytime soon. He's going to keep going.
No, well said. Yeah, congrats to Blind Dave. He is unbelievable. He really is amazed by him. And I know 18 hours later after that award, he's doing what he does in terms of inspiring youngsters. He's given a school assembly today as we speak, Monday. You know, you wouldn't know he's at a glitzy, glamorous London awards bash on a Sunday night. So. I remember being at school and having an assembly chat from Blind Dave. How many thousands, tens of thousands of kids must he have inspired? Not to mention the insane amount of money. So, yeah, he's an unbelievable guy. What a credit to the club and area.
Yeah, what a man indeed. Probably apt point, Coxie, to tell Albion fans why I won't be with you at Leicester on the weekend. I will in no way marry up my fundraising / running efforts to that of Blind Dave, which are dwarfed by what Blind Dave has done. But you'll be on your own at Leicester on Sunday, because I'll be preparing to run the London Marathon on Sunday. I'm not going to be there, which I'm judging from our mathematical workings out before, I'm quite glad, because I'd like to be there when Albion secure a playoff spot, or if they secure a playoff spot, which I'm not going to do on Saturday. But yeah, you'll be flying solo and I'll be running solo on Sunday. So I just want to say thank you to a lot of Albion fans who've donated. I'm running for the Robert Jones and Agnes Sun Orthopaedic Hospital in Oswestry, which is quite a well-known hospital around, not just around Shropshire, but around the country as well. Deals with a lot of sports players and sporting injuries. Raise money for them. And I know a lot of Albion fans have donated. One Albion fan in particular has been very generous with his sponsorship, friend of the podcast, Kitman Pat Frost, who is one of my shirt sponsors as well. So I'll be running with the words boing boing on the back of my shirt as well. Not quite sure if that'll be an inspirational quote or it'll be what I'll be doing along the streets of London by the end of the race. Thank you very much, Baggies fans, for all donating. I really appreciate it. And hopefully we can make it a win at Leicester, and then I'll get back in one piece over the finish line at Buckingham Palace on Sunday. But Cox, I hope you're going to be all right, Coxie, you know, because
I hope
you've been off for a while and you're just easing back in. Aren't you? Your holidays, you're going to be on your own. So you're going to have to put up with this stick from Andy Johnson on your own. You know, I'm not going to be there to back you up. You remember, just bite your tongue. Just let him let him run away with his mouth. You'll be absolutely
I'll try.
Fine.
Thank you. Yeah, I need to be inspired. But, you know, you do enough. You do enough games about me, don't you? So I need to take some of that inspiration. And yeah, now good luck, man. That's
cheers, mate.
That's
do you know what I'm most
feat.
Gutted about? I'm most
I don't
gutted.
Envy.
I'm most gutted. Like you're like a you're like a nerd when it comes to grounds, aren't you? You like to tick them
off.
Yeah,
I'm very excited.
I'm not so bothered about ticking grounds off. I just want to see like the nice ones. And like Leicester's obviously one of the big ones. I was buzzing to go to King Power on Saturday, more just to see what the food's like, which says everything
about
me.
I have to say, all we've heard all season is wait till you try the Leicester press.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I'm gutted, mate.
I can't promise that I won't send you photos of it, Johnny, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I'll send it over. Don't worry. Yeah, send
I'll
it
report
over.
Back. Well, look, we're spoilt enough at the Hawthorns, aren't we? Let's be honest.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've heard about Leicester's Premier League quality, so look forward to that. And I am a nerd when it comes to ticking off grounds, and this is my first new one for a while. So I think it's my 70th of the 92. So
nice.
That's
not
cool.
Far away. Just about to get relegated to League Two now.
Yes, yeah, I'll take the Premier League promotion, thanks, Johnny, rather than the League Two relegation. But yeah, so no, your presence will be, you know, your sort of jumpy or kind of fed up persona in the press box will be missed, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, hopefully you can get the job done. Anyway, just time for a quick advert. As always, all our podcasts here at the Express and Star and the Shop Star are sponsored by the Catalog Toaster Man, your graded product specialist over in Briley Hill, who, as we always tell you, has got a absolute array of unbelievable products, unbelievable brands for unbelievable, even more unbelievable prices, as we do every now and then. We haven't talked about air fryers for a while. I've been rooting through the air fryer section on the Kettle and Toaster Man. Like I was saying, mentioning to Cox, I'm looking at a new place. I actually bought a new house last week. So I'm going to be giving the Kettle and Toaster Man a buzz. I've already got an air fryer, but one of the baskets has broke. And rather than fixing it, I might treat myself to a new one. But if I do, I'm definitely going on to the Kettle and Toaster Man. And there's a couple that you can get yourself. It doesn't matter what, like, you can either get like a single one or a double. Have you got one yet, Coxie? I don't know if we've had this conversation.
Yeah, we do. We've had a.
I know it's not you. I know it's not used by you. But
no, this is it. This is a problem. Exactly that. We have had an air fryer for a little while, but it's not quite my domain. You know, I get a little. I get sort of cold sweats when I get near the kitchen, Johnny.
Yeah, it's easy. But anyway, you can get yourself.
I'm sure it is.
You can get your hands on all sorts down there. I've been able to sift through this morning. If you want just a little one, you can get yourself a 10-in-1 digital air fryer with oven and rotisserie for just £75. Or if you want a double basket job, if you want to go the double bubble and get a big one, you can get a dual air fryer salter for just £75. And that they are just two of a string of top air fryers they've got down there and top everything, basically. All the graded products down there. You can go along to the store in Briley Hill and have a little bit of a nosy, or if you want a gander from the comfort of your own sofa, head to the Kettle and Toaster Man. .co.uk. Right, we have got some questions from you lovely Baggies fans. There's some we won't read out because there's a couple of repeats and some stuff we've already talked about. We did have one from the last Blairite who asked how we would improve the match day experience, but we kind of talked a bit about that last week. So the answer is see last week's podcast. Baggies,
that'd be a good one to kind of have a sort of and maybe with guests, Johnny, maybe like a summer special on that.
Yeah.
You know, especially with you know, maybe one or two learned fans. And yeah, have like a good natter on it. Chalk that down in your diary.
I will do. I'll put that on the list. But cheers for your question anyway, last Blair. Right. And like we said, if you want to listen to what we've got to say, it's on last week's I think it was last week's podcast anyway. Baggies 1879 has asked about what we do up front, which we've already talked about for Leicester on Saturday, but thank you for your question. Joe Beddo has got in touch saying, are we any close to agreeing new contracts with Kipra and Moet, or are they waiting for options at the end of the season? This is something, like we've said, I think Coxie sort of see podcast number 38 or whatever. I don't think we'll find it out. You know, there some managers, you'd only ever find out about this sort of stuff if the manager was quite open about it. Or if the agents were a bit chopsy and wanted to get stuff out there. But Paul Brown said that he's not going to answer it. And I don't think many managers would. So I think it's generally going to be a case of probably wait and see till either it's announced or Albion's released and retained Leicester the next.
Yeah, I think also there's a thing here, isn't there, that so much is on the line here for Albion at the end of the season, clearly in the playoffs, and so many players' terms are up. You know, what is it? Up to 10 senior players. I mean, it's really quite a significant summer ahead, isn't it? And I think I totally appreciate the sort of interest veers towards Kipper and Moa as the top performers. But yeah, even on one or two of them, you know, we ask a question, but the head coach isn't going to divulge necessarily, even if he wants to, or even if it's feasible to want to keep them, because he doesn't want to unnecessarily rock any boats or players to read anything publicly that he doesn't want to be public. So yeah, I don't think anything in that regard will be decided till after the end of this the season for Albion, whether that be playoff semis, playoff final. I suspect that players' wishes might depend on promotion or not, and you would almost certain say that some finances depend on promotion or not, and also what the manager wants, you would say. Although I think the manager will be well aware that of the limitations. Yeah, we had the accounts a few weeks ago, didn't we? And we still know that the work ahead for Albion to lower their bill while trying to remain competitive. So there's a fascinating summer ahead to be had. I think we could say I'm not going to do it now. I think we've probably said it already, but I think we could draw up a list of players who will be released. I think that would be fairly easy. I think we could name a couple of uncertainties, and I think I don't know, between two and four players maybe the head coach would want to keep. But again, there's so many variables to it. I don't expect to hear any news on it before Albion kick the final ball, basically.
Yeah, we've got a couple of questions here. Dicko's gets in touch. He said, promotion or not, who's getting released regardless? And Reuben Thompson said, looking forward to the summer if we stay in the Championship. Apart from Kipper, would you let every single out-of-contract player go? And he's asked something else about Shilan Patel, which we'll come on to in a little while. But to be honest, Coxie, my prediction is that if Albion go up, they will try and keep Kipper and they will try and keep Mowat. And they might try and keep one more other senior player, but I don't think they'll keep many others. And I think it'll be the same if they stay down in terms of, you've got Kyle Bartley there, is probably Kyle Bartley and Matt Phillips are probably two of the highest earners at Albion, given the fact that, you know, well, Matt Phillips was signed in the Premier League and Kyle Bartley's been on a Premier League contract once before. So I think regardless of what division they're in, I doubt they stay, to be honest.
Well, there's also a difference, isn't there, between Albion wanting to keep them / offering them a contract and the players accepting that.
If they stay, the only way I can see Phillips and Bartley staying is on reduced terms, which will be difficult because Kyle Bartley and Matt Phillips can go and do a job at a top six championship club where they could probably earn more money, potentially.
And even then, Johnny, they're not
short suitors.
Sorry, mate. Yeah, I was just going to say, and even on those reduced terms offers, it wouldn't surprise me if it was only feasible for one of them to stay around. And that's not because they're not valued or maybe even wanted, but I just think with the age factor and also the fitness factor, really. I mean, when it comes to, I mean, a huge Matt Phillips fan, but you've got to weigh that up, haven't you? And I've heard it said quite recently, I don't know if I've repeated it on the podcast, that someone made a good point to me. When it comes to the sort of Bartley and Phillips debate, I think finding a dominant, sort of experienced centre defender in this division, in terms of Bartley, probably harder to come by than a Phillips, than a winger. Look, you can get sort of attackers, wide players, potentially more easy on loan than a centre half ready to come in and affect things. So might that lean Albion more towards Kyle Bartley than Phillips? Now, I'm not saying it's definitely one or the other. That's not intel. That's just sort of hypothesizing. I know Bartley's missed periods this season, but his sort of fitness record generally is a bit better than that Phillips's injury record is sort of, it's been problematic for him, hasn't it? And a shame again this season. So yeah, there's fascinating debates to be had on all of the fronts, really. I think, look, Kipper and Mowat for me have played like two players in sort of peak prime ages, yeah, who know the rest of their career and sort of futures and good contracts that are kind of on the line. They've looked to me like they've given it sort of all they've got to play at the top level, the probably the best, you know, sort of seasons they've probably had as pros relative to the level, and have more than done enough to earn another, you know, another deal here on, you would say, similar terms. They might say they warrant increased terms, but are Albion capable of that? You'd probably say no, but they would feel they've merited that. And if they can't get it here, then they're going to have a look elsewhere, obviously. And I don't doubt that Kipper and Moat would have more than their fair share of suitors.
They would. And I think from the rest of this is a thought I had a little while ago, and it's probably something I'll probably revisit depending on what happens at the end of the season. But if you look now, it's difficult to say whether Albion will keep Ted Cam as their third choice goalkeeper. But Martin Kelly goes, Eric Peters goes, for me, Matt Phillips goes. If Albion are in the Championship, there's a question mark around Adam Reach because he's so well thought of by Carlos Corbran, but I imagine Reach will go. Yan and V is another one it'd be interesting to see because Carlos Corbran thinks a lot of him. Nathaniel. Yeah, I would think so at 33. And for me, Nathaniel Chalobah goes, don't think he's done enough to win another contract. If Albion don't go up, Premier League money is everything in football these days, because it just is, no matter if you're a purist or not. But if Albion go down, there is almost a very good opportunity for don't say rebuild, because not everyone is out of contract, but there are players that will be going that have been there for quite a while now on decent dough, and they'll probably be out of the door, and it might just give Carlos Corbran and Albion a chance to reset and rebuild a little bit. That's why I think if they stay down or if they go up, I don't think it kind of makes a huge difference, apart from those two at the top in terms of Mowat and Kipra. Albion will want to keep them regardless of what division they're in, but I think the rest of them, certainly in the Championship, you know, I can't see all.
I don't think you're far wrong there. I don't think you're far wrong. I don't think it's too far from a rebuild. Another phrase came to my head, like clear the decks almost. Yeah. And that sounds a bit derogatory, doesn't it, to those players? And yeah, it's not throwing a blanket over them and saying they're not good enough, but for different reasons, age, experience, maybe time at the club, money they're on versus what could perhaps be sought, you know, got elsewhere. There's a few factors, isn't there? And also another factor, by the way, is the head coach being at the club for 18 months.
Well, yeah.
Longer, by the time it comes to summer, not being able to really put his stamp on it in any way. Now, all of a sudden, there's new ownership. And yes, we know that means they can't throw money at it, and they won't, and they can't. But there's new ownership, I'm sure, more willing to support the manager than the previous. And there's also, finally, yeah, a line in the sand with a number of first team senior options out of contract. Look, this isn't just pie in the sky talk. You know, the accounts, the official club and group accounts a couple of weeks ago referencing this, you know, the high number of players, big earners out of contract. So it's a big summer for the club. It really is. There will, though, remain the balance of, yes, moving a significant number on, a number on, sorry, but still, Corbran still needs a squad, and there's not far from a bottomless pit of funds to spend or anything like that. So yeah, I imagine the loan market will be utilised. I do. Free agent market potentially, though Albion will know what they can go up to and won't. Yeah, I don't think can afford to make potential errors they did a couple of years ago. But Corbran still has to retain numbers required to have another crack next season, I guess. But it's going to be a fascinating summer ahead. It really is. I can, just to summarise as a bottom line, I can well imagine the number of out-of-contract players staying as being pretty low.
Yeah. No, it's one that obviously there's a lot of stipulations to it. But cheers for your questions, guys. The second part of Ruben's question says, plus, how good was it to see Shilin Patel on the sidelines before the match? Don't think peace ever went down there before a game. I think we can marry this into the fact that Shilin Patel and his relative, Ashish Patel, I want to apologise if that's not the correct pronunciation, who's also obviously involved with Albion now. They were with Blind Dave at the EFL Awards, if Albion fans will have seen on social media on Sunday night. And he was there on Saturday or Tuesday or Wednesday, whenever it was, greeting all the bike riders who come in and who were doing a charity thing for the Albion Foundation. And I think everything we are seeing at the moment with Shilin Patel is probably what a lot of football fans up and down the land are craving from their owners. Yeah. Now Shilin Patel's done both. He's put his money where his mouth is, you know, already with the paying off of the loan and the Wisden Smart one. And now he's just showing an awful lot of humility. And the fact that he's been over here for about 5 or 6 games now is terrific. And that's more than Gouch and Lai did in 8 years or however long he was at the club. Yeah. It's incredible, really. And yeah, I think it's fantastic. We have an owner that actually cares. And I think, you know, we've seen a lot of American owners getting into football, haven't we? And we've seen a lot of them doing it the right way, I think. You know, a lot of people, I live a stone's throw from Wrexham, and a lot of people are critical of the Wrexham story because of the money involved and et cetera, et cetera. But they've ran the football club in the right way. Obviously, they've got more money than everyone else, so they're going to do really well. But they're treating the club as it should be treated. And they used similar terminology to what Patel used when he came in and said he was the custodian of the football club. He's not really the owner. He's just, you know, the gatekeeper at the moment, so to speak. And it's just great. It's such, you know, so you'd have said this to me 6 months ago, I would have laughed at you. So, yeah, I think you're right, Ruben. It's fantastic to see. You say peace wasn't there, went down there before a match. No, he didn't. He's probably a different owner. He was a good owner, but a different owner. But this one, yeah, he's very much public facing, and he's sort of walking the walk at the moment, which is great to see.
Very encouraging start, hasn't it? It's been an immensely encouraging start. Everything you would want, and delivering on it. And I don't get the impression in the slightest that this is something that will wane and kind of tail off and lose interest. I don't get that at all. I think it will continue. Obviously, there's an element of while you're getting your feet under the table, getting to know things early doors. But I think this, I mean, we've said for a couple of months now, haven't we, since this has all sort of been ratified and confirmed, that get the feeling that it could be the start of good times and secure times and prosperous times for the club. And yeah, he's just delivering on it so far, I would say. And his presence at the top of the club is part of another part of why it's such a fascinating summer, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, it's certainly been a very good start. Cheers for your questions, guys. Baggies 1879 has actually got in touch with another question. With our stuttering end of season form, it's not giving us any momentum going into these playoffs. We really need a win against a good team like Leicester to put belief back into the players and the fans. Do you think we have the ability to beat the teams above us in the playoffs? Absolutely. I think if any manager can come up with a plan for a one-off game, it's Carlos Corbran in this division. I think, regardless of who Albion get, let's have a look at the championship table at the moment. No one really wants to win the league or go up automatically, do they? They're all itching to get in the playoffs by the look of things. But Southampton have got 2 games in hand over second place Leicester. If they win both of those, well, no, sorry, 1 game in hand. So they're still playing catch up. I think it's going to be Ipswich and Leicester. So I think it'll be Leeds, Southampton, West Brom, Norwich. Can beat Norwich, can beat Leeds, we've shown that. Southampton are the tricky ones, but in a one-off, like we said, in a one-off game where Albion just need a result on that day, I would back Carlos Corbran to come up with a plan to beat anyone. I don't know what you think, Coxie, but I wouldn't be frightened of anyone in the playoffs.
I've said it before on these pods, so I'll say it again. I don't mind fifth or even sixth, because I don't mind the idea of the Hawthorns first, I think. Albion still, despite, you know, defeat on Saturday, so there's still a bit of a fear factor there for opposition, in that Albion are better there. And yes, I know Southampton came and won there comfortably, but different time, different games. I would back Corbran to deliver a positive result of sorts at home and then look, go away and defend it. And yeah, all right, so I'm encouraged by hopefully a home first leg. I don't know who I'd rather play or not. I guess Southampton has got to be bottom of the who do you want to play list. I think Albion have looked decent against Leeds this season, really. Ipswich, I mean, Albion have shown they can do a job against Ipswich, haven't they? But again, these are different. I'm loath to take too much from the league games themselves.
Yeah.
Yes, it's the comparison, but it's not. It's a different kettle of fish, isn't it? So, but there is a Russell Martin factor, isn't there, over Albion, frustratingly, because I know he's not everyone's cup of tea, but he certainly knows how to get a result against Albion.
Oh, is he not? I thought he was a lovely bloke. There's no arrogance about him whatsoever. He's an absolute lovely chap.
Well, you said that, Johnny.
Sense the sarcasm in my voice.
but yeah, he likes to beat Albion, unfortunately. But yeah, I like the idea of I can see that the Hawthorns are well up for a first leg, and I think it could serve Albion well.
Yeah, hopefully.
But winning at Leicester on Saturday would be superb. Just to be able to get a positive result against one of the big hitters.
Yeah. Bags 879, cheers for your question. One final one from Stuart Hawkins. I'm not one of the BTA bashers. He was a 300k signing from League Two and has taken on as backup to DK, even though he was predominantly a winger. He does try his best, but how much longer can we pin our hopes on him to get us the goals we need to get promoted? It's not really much of a choice, I don't think, in that.
It's not his fault, is it? It's no one's choice that all the hopes have been on Brandon
Thomas-Dante. I think he's done as well as, you know, he should have scored a lot more goals because he has had chances. But I think you look at his returns from his time at Arden, I think he's done okay. And I think it's a case of, he is going to be a good centre forward. He's got all the hallmarks of being a good centre forward, but he's still very young. And I think Stuart, I get it, Stuart. I entirely get your question. But I also think if Albion had a Sammy Smodic up front, they probably would have been competing for the top two this season. Adam Armstrong. You know, I don't know, he's got the most goals at Leeds, Somerville probably. But it's going to be Tom Sante for. Well, certainly till the summer anyway. I know he's
Johnny, you just said his return, in terms of numbers and goals for Albion has been okay. Then you say make it relative to the fee and where he came from. And I'd say better than okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, he wasn't signed with the idea that he'd be the only available striker for over a season, was he?
No, exactly.
And yes, look, we spoke about his areas of improvement massively, but. It really isn't his fault that he's had to be flogged time and time again with all the responsibility of goals in that one position. The major luck Albion have had, the one permanent player they bought, so I think I'm right in saying, haven't I? The one permanent player they were able to bring to the club last summer, make it a striker. Obviously, I would have been on pinned hopes on him in terms of wage, and to have two massive contact injuries like that. That's awful, awful, awful luck. And that's before you even get onto the DK factor. And people will scoff and be like, well, DK is just injury after injury after injury. Yes, might be, but he's still on a contract on Albion. And he was still a big money signing and the rest of it. So, yeah, I don't know. Thomas Asante was guilty of a bad mistake on Saturday, that red card. Two poor tackles, two yellows, the second in particular. Chasing the first touch. The first half an hour of the game hadn't gone for him anyway. His touch was loose. He was sort of struggling a little bit and it just went the wrong way for him. And big lesson learned. I'm sure he will. He's a proper lad. He's a really good lad and a really good character around the place. I'm sure he'll learn that lesson and hopefully keep progressing in Albion colours.
Yeah, I hope certainly hope he does. Baggies fans, thanks for your questions. We're just getting to the end of the podcast. So we're going to have a little bit of glance forward to that trip to the King Power on Saturday. Coxie, are West Brom going to Leicester at a pretty good time? Leicester have lost their last two games. Prior to that, they have got two wins, but it's three defeats in their last four defeats in their last six in all competitions. So they are faltering somewhat. But yeah, is it a sort of a tie? Are Albion expected to get anything at the weekend as well? You know, given that they're in the top two.
Those couple of defeats lately have been on the road, and they've won a couple at home sort of prior to that. But they have been beaten at the King Power sort of recent weeks and recent months. So they're not, you know, they do have a weakness at home. It's not like Leeds with the Leeds at their unbeaten home record slip away, didn't they, over the weekend? So look, Leicester are clearly there to be got at. They're clearly not the all-conquering side that came to the Hawthorns in December. It was Leicester that Madger scored his goal in, wasn't it, Johnny? Late on as a sub, that close-range finish that looked like being an equaliser. So hopefully there's a bit of poetry there with Madger sort of being back around it. Albion will have to play something like where they were for half an hour, I think, at the Hawthorns the other day, and try and extend it for more of the game, a lot of the game. Try and make it tell more in the penalty area of the opposition in terms of getting efforts away, closer to goal, making the keeper work a bit more, and then making those moments count. Leicester clearly there with to be got at, having issues, but look, still look at their squad. That's still a squad that can, I would say, tear any side apart on any given day at this level, and clearly they have a lot on the line. I mean, yeah, it sounds stupid, it sounds weird, but Leicester almost have more on the line than Albion, don't they? In terms of, we're confident still of Albion finishing in the top six. I don't imagine Leicester are overly confident about finishing in the top two. Their sort of margin for error is smaller than Albion's, isn't it? It just is. So I don't know if there's going to be that'll work for or against them, won't it? That could be a lot of tension around the place, a lot of nerves, or it could spur them on. It's hard to say, but I'm looking forward to it on a number of levels. I'll say, having not been there, but even just seeing, you know, even comparing them, how I thought they looked good earlier in the season, and Albion played really well to match them, by the way, before throwing away in stoppage time. But yeah, just interested to see if Albion can kind of rally after defeat and go again and put in a big performance to match a, you know, one of the other big hitters. And can't stress what I think we said 5-10 minutes ago about how going there and winning, even a positive performance and a draw, would really instill that kind of, you know, that belief that you can go away and do it for the playoffs. I think it'll be massive.
Yeah, it would be huge. Indeed. Well, Coxie, enjoy your trip. Hopefully come back with 3 points.
Enjoy your run.
Thanks, mate. Yeah,
good luck. Like to say, speak on behalf of all the listeners, I'm sure.
I'd like to say I'm looking forward to it, but I'm absolutely not. I'm sure I will be on the day. But as I said before, thank you, Baggies fans, for all your kind donations. Hopefully, Carlos Corbrand's men can turn it on and get it almost done at the King Power on Saturday. As always, thank you very much for listening to me and Mr. Cox. And until next time on the Baggies broadcast, boing, boing.
Boing, boing.